Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I talk to the spirit?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Geek Bites, brought to you by the
Geek
Buddies.
Hey! We're getting better. The non-Shannon Geek Buddy war cry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to remember, it took us a while to get it right with Shannon. So, right, Mike? Yeah. So, I mean, the two of us can't get together. Might not be so, might take some time, that's for sure.
It's
but
fair. It's fair.
It is a rainy West Coast day here on Tuesday. And, you know, as Michael Vogel tweeted out and as I tweeted out, we wanted to come up with an idea for a Geek Bites episode to kind of take our mind off all the rain and everything that's going on. And we asked you all for some suggestions. So this is the suggestions that we got. We might as well bring them up, Michael, here. And let's take a look at these tweets. These are three tweets. We've kind of mixing them together here. So we're giving three people credit. Michael, you want to take us through these tweets? Here they are on the screen. Tell us what they're saying.
Here is our Geek Bite mashup for the day. We have got Jonathan at John_Yara saying, is streaming good or bad for Hollywood? And we have Francisco Lopez at FJLopez1505 saying, topic, what does the new state of comic book movies look like from the MCU, DCU, Sony's Marvel, and other, and do you believe in it or not? And then Puneet Jassy at P_Jassy says, if you were the execs in charge, how would you try to improve MCU, DC, Disney current state? So in our Geek Buddies mashup for the day, we thought all three of those kind of connected, given that looking at streaming and looking at all of the big brands, I mean, that's a huge part now. How do you balance out the streaming and the features and the rollout? And is it too much and is it not enough? And there's other things that we'll touch on with streaming too. And then just what is going on with all these universes and are they good? Are they not? Yeah. Where are they going? What do we think? And although this is stuff that we kind of tend to talk about on the weekly show, on the individual things that pop up, just kind of as a whole topic, because it's a really rainy Tuesday. And I should be working on a bunch of other things, but I didn't feel like it because it's raining. And so my way of procrastinating is to talk about this stuff with you all and my boy, John Rocha.
Hello. Hello. Yeah, this is an interesting point you bring up because it is all mixed in because it's all kind of connected to each other as a brand, especially if we want to focus on just Disney. How would we fix Disney, Marvel, the MCU, Star Wars itself? And how is streaming affecting things, as we've spoken about on the show with Bob Chapek and Bob Iger, everything that happened there. And we see them wanting to limit the budgets now. We're on the precipice of Deadpool 3 coming out. And I don't know if you guys know this, but Josh Brolin in a recent interview over the weekend said that he had a feeling and he heard it in the wind that Thanos might be coming back. So he might not be done with Thanos. And not to be outdone, Jeremy Renner also chimed in and let it be known to everybody that he is back in shape, back from his accident. He is ready to be Hawkeye again. So these are the questions that we have going through our minds here is what do we do with streaming in connected to as it's connected to the studios, and how do we fix what's going to happen here as we look at 2024, Michael? So when you look at all these questions, what's the first thing you want to address as we kind of explore the subject here on Geek Bites?
Well, I think the first thing to address is let's just touch on the streaming thing,
okay,
not as a whole, and then we'll get to how it affects these brands, and that'll kind of lead us to the brands. Like, streaming is definitely affecting the industry.
Yeah.
It's been affecting the industry, and it's going to continue to affect the industry. Is it good or bad? I don't know, but it's here to stay. It's kind of like AI. It's kind of like everything. We could argue whether it's good or bad, but it's not going anywhere.
Right.
So it's more what is actually happening right now. And I think, you know, what's happening right now is that with streaming, you know, for streamers to keep their subscribers, it's a beast that just has to keep getting fed.
Yeah.
and you got to keep shoveling content in there. And I think what the streamers are realizing, you know, we lived in a period of time where particularly Netflix was like, oh, if we just spend billions of dollars and make a bunch of stuff, if 70% of it is shit, but 30% of it hits really hard, we seem to be doing great. I think that's going to work. And then everybody was like, oh shit, streaming is the way. And then we got Disney Plus and we got Paramount Plus and we got HBO Max and we got everything else. And everybody started like throwing all this content. We got all our library content. You can watch everything. And here's the new stuff we're doing. And we're spending all this money and we got all these celebrities and we got all these big things. And then they were like, oh shit, this model doesn't work. We don't, like, once you get a certain number of subscribers, you don't get more.
Yeah.
And so now they're all freaking out and they're all pulling back and they're all spiraling. And so they sort of have cannibalized a lot of traditional television models. Mm-hmm. And because people have stopped going to the movies for some of the smaller movies, whether that be romantic comedies or comedy or stuff like that, they've kind of cannibalized that. So they've changed the way that we all take in entertainment. And they've kind of changed our habits, but now they realize they can't sustain that. And so now as they're making less and studios are trying to figure out how to get us back into the movies and networks are going, well, what do we put on TV? Like, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine at Nickelodeon and they were saying, we're really not sure what to do because kids aren't watching TV the way they used to.
Right.
But Paramount Plus says they don't need any more animation because they've got all these libraries of animation. And so now we're not sure because kids aren't really watching either or, and they're on YouTube and TikTok, so we don't know what to do. So it's kind of upset the entire model. And I think we're now in a period of time where everyone is trying to figure out, where are people watching TV? Why are people going to the movies? And how do we split the difference between our network shows, our streaming shows, and what we're putting in theaters?
Yeah, I mean, it's been such a combustible situation since COVID because some companies adapted to the streaming model really quickly, like Disney Plus, and other companies were a little slow to it. Obviously, Netflix and Prime Video had already been kind of doing that already, and I think Peacock was still somewhat in its nascent phase, so to speak, so it was on its way. And then we had Paramount Plus, and then we have, like I said, Disney Plus and these other things that came along. And now we got MGM Plus, we got AMC Plus, we got all these pluses going on. And now what we're seeing is more of these streaming services are being folded into its into each other. We've seen a lot of the Warner Brothers Discovery stuff end up on Netflix because Zaslav is having a fire sale over at WBD. And now we're hearing how Warner Brothers might even purchase Paramount, or Paramount's going to sell a piece of its stake here in the studio down the road. Who is going to get it? Who are the big dogs going to try to get it? You know, Warner's got to wait till April to be able to make a bid on Paramount because of stuff that they've done in the past. So this is all mixing in. And now we're hearing that they want to fold in more streaming services into themselves so they become one thing. And we see that happening as well. So I think what happened was people thought, studios thought, executives thought, you know what? Netflix can do it. We can do it. Seems pretty easy. We'll remove our content from Netflix. We'll put it on the stream. But the, or streaming service, but as you said, Michael, so well, new content is what gets people to go and keep subscribing to your service. And Netflix recently, last week, you know, during their Tudum event, they spoke about the fact that they are moving away from making films for theaters, theatrical films. They're going to be much more focused on doing stuff that they've been doing here on their own service. They find much more of a positive response. The numbers are back up for Netflix every quarter. And that tells you that they understood the streaming game because they've been at it longer than these studios. And the studios are scrambling to try to create all this content. And then you're getting pushback from the creatives who are upset when these films get either bagged, like that recent Halle Berry film, or they get upset when their stuff goes to streaming and doesn't take off. Yeah, they've made their money initially, but it doesn't have a long shelf life. And then we saw with what WBD was doing was canceling and taking things off their service so that no one could discover this stuff over again. So it's an interesting time right now with streaming and how it's all affecting things. And like you said, people are still staying home to watch certain things, but I do still think that people want to go to the theater, and it's been very clear. So yeah, finding that middle ground is going to be real difficult in the next few years. I think a number of streaming services, Mike, are going to go defunct or merge with others.
Well, and it's interesting because, like, yeah, look, people absolutely still want to go to the theaters. You can see that. Like, we talk about it all the time. Like, some certain movies have huge box offices, but they're fewer and further between. I know a lot of friends in the industry who are very successful. who can't get comedies greenlit right now to be made for theaters because comedies are having a harder time. Comedies, rom-coms, kind of some of those smaller movies are like, oh, well, why am I going to go see that in a theater? I'd rather watch this really funny movie with these big celebrities that just came out on Prime.
Right. Right.
I can watch that from my home. Now, I'll go to the theater to go see Poor Things because it's nominated for an Oscar, or right. I'm going to go see the next big Marvel movie, or I'm going to go see Dune 2 because that you kind of want to see on the big screen. Yeah. But then for like these other three or four films, I mean, even with the Oscar films, like I'll go see an Oscar film in the theater if I'm really excited about it or if it's not available on streaming. But if I can watch it on streaming, I mean, I'm going to watch it on my couch. So, you know, it's changed everything. I mean, and I think another thing that's changed is just like, you know, I know that Abbott Elementary is a ABC comedy. It's an ABC comedy.
Yeah. It's on ABC.
But I watch Abbott Elementary on Hulu.
Yeah.
And I don't watch it the night it comes out. I wait a couple weeks and then I watch like three or four episodes of Abbott Elementary. You know, like for the certain shows, like the big shows that we're going to review, like The Mandalorians or the new Marvel shows or, you know, The Gilded Age, because I love it. you know, like there's certain shows that I know, oh, well, this is going to premiere. I know that True Detective on Sunday night is coming out at this time on Max. So I'll watch that. But I'm not like, I mean, I think like we're kind of living in a place where we still have network television and then we also have streaming. Yeah. And I think eventually one's winning out.
Yeah.
winning out. Like right now we sort of have both, but most of the shows that are the most popular. You can watch them either or. So I don't know. And then just kind of to get to the next piece of it.
Yeah.
This affects, you know, all of the big brands because when we talk about superhero fatigue or we talk about Star Wars fatigue or we talk about are these brands special anymore, it's kind of that's the problem is that Star Wars, and look, I'm saying this as someone who loves Star Wars. I'm going to watch every Star Wars thing that comes out until I'm dead. That's just going to happen. Right. But is Star Wars as special when I can watch it every single week on my couch? Like when you have, oh, well, like what do we have this year? We got Bad Batch season 3 coming out.
Yep.
We got Skeleton Key coming out.
Yeah.
We've got
Skeleton Acolyte Crew. Skeleton Crew
coming out. We've got Acolyte coming out.
Yeah.
We know that there's these four movies that are currently at some level of development or production.
Yeah.
There's maybe going to be a Mando season 4. We know we're going to get an Ahsoka season 2. Like at some point, is it too much? But also, you got to feed the streaming beast. Like Disney has four buckets, and they're going to keep feeding those buckets. I don't think any of us are going to get National Geographic fatigue anytime soon. But for the rest of it, like, they're running the problem. And DC's got the same thing. Like, we got Peacemaker season 2. We've got the Penguin series coming out. They're going to want to do more things. We got Creature Commandos, the animated series coming out. So as you're feeding the streaming and you're going to the movies, some of us, most of you who are listening to this Geek Bite, we're probably going to watch all of it.
Yeah.
But most other people are like, oh God, how much of this do I got to watch? So it really, the streaming, I mean, and even more specifically, when you read the Reign of Marvel Studios, the MCU book, when you just read about like the history of MCU and you talk about kind of where we're at with the MCU right now, it seems pretty clear that the moment that Kevin Feige had to split his attention between movies and TV, and you had to start scheduling TV shows to fall between your movie releases, and this connects to this, and this character's here, but then they show up here, and then you got this going on. It's kind of when Marvel started to feel a little overburdened.
Yeah.
So not only is there like a fatigue issue on our side, but there's a creatively, how can you juggle all of these things between streaming and features?
Right. When you could take the time to, you know, look at a good artist and look at what they're doing and see them on the come up, and you want to grab them, you know, like grab Coogler in 2016 or 17, whenever they grabbed him to do Black Panther, you grab him because you've seen Fruitvale Station. Now there are so many opportunities for these directors to come through and do stuff. You're not going to get the same level of quality consistently across the board. And that's what I think is happening here. Not only are you being inundated with the amount of content that you're having to watch to stay up to date if you're a mad fan of these properties and these franchises and these IP, but now you're also having to trudge through, some not so great installments or some not so great series or movies that are made for streaming that you have to watch in order to stay on top of stuff. And that can affect how you look at this. And that's what we're seeing here with Star Wars and Marvel, as you're pointing out, this is getting to the point where a saturation point, I think, is happening here, where the fans are realizing, look, this is all too much. And we had seen that building over the last few years, not only from fans, but critics as well, who were saying, like, why do I have to watch 400 other things in order to be able to watch this main thing? And so it's a way of training the audience to change their expectations. And I think it was easier when it was happening to us in the 80s with comic books. Okay, I got to buy Alpha Flight 32 and I got to buy Spider-Woman 7 so that I can, you know, stay on tack with this overall story that Marvel is trying to tell. But when it comes to TV, that's really a large commitment. You can rip through a comic book in 5-10 minutes, but the amount of time you're being asked to spend to watch these series in order to stay on top of them, you're asking a lot of your general consumer. And I also think that's why this Mando and Grogu movie, the rumors that are coming out is that it's a standalone adventure with, yes, some people are going to come in and do cameos, but it's very much just a singular adventure. And I think Disney's realizing that and making the steps they need to make to get people back into watching their stuff. And eventually Marvel's going to have to go down that route under the Disney banner as well.
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, I think... I understand what you're saying. I think one of the a couple differences between comic books and TV. You're right about some of those differences, but the other one is You don't need as many people reading a comic book for it to be successful.
That's true. You don't need as many people
and
making
so
it.
So for years, this is how comic books work. Comic, but yes, you're right. You're like, oh, well, I'm reading X-Men. Oh, but Alpha Flight showed up, so now I got to read the Alpha Flight comic. Oh, and if I want to read this giant crossover, I got to read these 18 comics that I don't really like, and I don't like the art, and I don't like the writer, but I want to read everything to know what's going on, so I'm going to buy those too. Like, that's how comic books make their money.
Yeah.
But it's a small percentage of the population that's buying all those comic books, and
true,
they still did pretty good.
Yeah.
For a TV show or a movie to be successful, you need a lot more people to be invested. And Marvel, their success for phases 1, 2, and 3 was they got everybody invested.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they did. But that kind of leads to the third point, which is, you know, how would we fix it, or what are we going to do? Because like I said, streaming's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy for all of us to say, oh, they should make less. They should make less, but they're not going to make less. They got to make their money. They got to put, you need Mando and Grogu on streaming, and we're going to put them in the movies. And if Daisy is in this movie, but then we're going to have this character spin off and have a TV show, and we got to know what happens with us. Like, we're going to keep doing it until they drive it all into the ground, or they figure out how to make us really, really invested and freak out about it again.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I was talking to somebody about this recently, and I think we talk a lot about, oh, is the multiverse too much? Is it too confusing? Are there too many stories going on? But I think the bigger issue is there's not anything right now that we really care about what happens next.
Mm.
And I think what I mean by that is all stories at the end of the day are about an emotional connection. Most, like, we all love romance.
Yeah.
You know, we love Kate and Leo get together on the Titanic, you know, and it's just like, yeah, it's great. I love it. You know, it's like we Gone with the Wind. Like, take your pick of any Pretty Woman. Like, take your pick of any of the epic romances that we love. But like, every story is about connection. It's like, this is about a boy and his father. This is about a girl and her mom. This is about brothers. This is about sisters. This is about this. And you get these emotional connections. And I think where Marvel really succeeded in phases 1, 2, and 3 is that, look, we've said this 1,000 times, like, Steve Rogers and Peggy, they got all the mileage in the world out of that. Like, Steve Rogers wishing he could have been with Peggy, and Peggy going on to build S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, we were invested in that. Like, we were invested in Star-Lord and Gamora. Mm-hmm. We were invested in Gamora and Nebula.
Yeah.
And then they very smartly, with Avengers Endgame, introduced Tony Stark and Pepper having a kid. So that when we got to, or, you know, kind of introduce that, so that when we got to, should we like erase everything in the blip, Tony Stark was like, I can't erase my kid. I love you 3000. Like, they gave us all of these emotional touch points.
Right.
So that even though it was all time travel and Thanos and aliens and Infinity Stones and all this weird shit, like, you get to the end of Endgame and it's like, you know, Tony sacrificed, making the big sacrifice for his kid. You've got Gamora and Nebula kind of getting back together. You've got Peter Quill seeing Gamora after she died. You've got the final shot is Steve and Peggy. Like, they set up over 3 phases of Marvel, all of these emotional touch points that we actually cared about. What's happening with the multiverse right now is like, who are we? What are the emotional connections we're rooting for?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of cool stuff, and there's a lot of great characters, but who are the epic romances? Who are the relationships that we want to see turn around? Like, at this point in phases 1, 2, and 3, like, we had moved a lot along. Like, do She-Hulk and Bruce have a lot that they need to work out?
Yeah.
Like, is Shang-Chi and his sister going to work things out?
Yeah.
Is there any romances going on? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I think that's where the danger lies. And, you know, with the decision they made to go younger, right? They had to age out their older, like I say, again, I'll make the connection to sports. It's aging out your older veteran players who've taken you to a number of Super Bowls, but you've got to bring the new younger players in. But the new younger players don't have quite the experience. You haven't built up the connections between them as strongly. And so it's showing on the field with the way they're playing the game. And we're seeing this here with the current crop of Marvel stuff. You're not seeing that connection to the younger characters yet. We haven't had time to explore them yet. They're presenting them, but they're not bringing them together yet. And I think there's a feeling here where people are starting to tune out because it seems like it's all over the place and they're not quite making it work. Yes, at the end of the Marvels, you see that Kamala Khan is going to put this team together and they're going to do their thing and we'll see where it goes. But it's going to be a while before we get there. Are people going to stay interested before we get there? I don't know. And you cast younger actors versus the older actors with Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and Scarlett Johansson. Those were already older, seasoned veteran actors. The actors you have now are younger. There's a different connection the audience has with them. And I understand the logic. I just don't see that it's working right now.
Well, but I think you're right about all of that. I think to add to that, though, the issue is they've introduced a lot of characters, but they've not given us it's a very basic. I talk about this all the time when we do screenwriting stuff, or I'm in a writer's room. Like, I always use Disney movies as an example because they're so basic. And so they're basic in a good way, like very simple and clear. Ariel wants to be part of the human world.
Yeah.
Belle wants to get the fuck out of that town. Aladdin doesn't want to be poor on the street and wants to be rich.
Right.
Like, at the beginning of the movie, you go, I get what this is. Steve Rogers' entire arc is, I don't know if I belong here. I really miss Peggy.
Yeah.
I miss the old days. I miss Peggy. That's what it is. Robert Downey Jr. is like, Tony Stark is like, I'm a millionaire playboy. I don't really care about anything. Oh, yeah. I love my kids so much that I would do anything for her. You know, like, there's these arcs that are built. All the characters they've introduced, for the most part, there's a couple that I'm like, okay, maybe we got one too many. You didn't really do stuff with this. But in phase 4 and 5, like, I kind of think everyone has potential.
Potential, like, sure.
Shang-Chi's great.
Yeah.
But he had his adventure, worked things out with dad.
Yeah.
Got the 10 rings. What does he want?
It feels like so long ago.
What is his desire? Kamala Khan, like, is like, I'm thrilled that she's putting together the Young Avengers. I love the Young Avengers. But, like, what do I want? The only character that I can think – there's two characters that I think are winning right now in the Marvel Universe from an emotional storytelling standpoint. And they fucked one up already. So, Wanda Maximoff was your A-plus MVP of the next phase of the Marvel Universe. WandaVision came out swinging, and you gave us – A epic romance that rivals Steve and Peggy, in my opinion, as far as, like, this is the romance of the Marvel Universe. Like, Wanda and Vision, holy shit, you hit this. I care so much about those two.
Yeah.
And I care so much about their twins, who she had to give up.
Yeah.
And then you sort of pissed it all away in Multiverse of Madness, as opposed to really building me out. Like, I mean, we all know that Billy's coming back. We all know they're going to introduce Wiccan. They're going to do it. But now it's just sort of happening to tick the box.
Mm-hmm.
It's not happening in this emotional, like, oh my God, when Wanda sees that her kid is real and what is she going to think? And then we know that Vision is out there. Are they going to be Billy's parents or are they not? And is that going to tear them up? Like, there's so much emotional stuff that's just left on the table.
Yeah.
And then the other one where I think they've done a great job and we talk about it all the time is, like, I think we all genuinely care about what's happening with Peter Parker.
Yes, 100%.
100%. We genuinely are like, oh shit, nobody knows who he is anymore. Nobody knows his secret. He's holding on to that. That's great storytelling.
Yeah.
But I, like I said, Miss Marvel, I love. I think Shang-Chi is great. I think the Eternals are pretty cool. I know I'm in the minority, but like, I think there's a lot of potential there. Like, you can go down all these movies and you're like, I really care. But like, then there's these other things that happen that should be emotional, or they could be emotional. But like, do we all really care that Jane is chilling in Valhalla right now?
Yeah.
Like, are we really invested in that? Are we really invested that
even Cassie, even the Cassie situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Even Cassie and Scott, you kind of got to the end and you're like, okay, like Cassie got to do some cool shit, but like, there's not this, like, what's the beef? I take that back. The other Loki, they've done great with.
Sure.
Loki works because the Loki Sophie stuff, watching Loki's journey. So like, those are the places when you go on Twitter and you go, oh, here's what people love. Right. Like, those are the places where it works. And I think the reason that I'm harping on this so much is that when you look at where Marvel's at right now, or you look at what DC is about to do, or you look at the fact that we're all like, oh, was Ahsoka good? Was it bad? Well, I love Ahsoka, but it was a little this, it was a little that. Like, you have to go, who is this character? What is their emotional issue? What is their emotional want? Mm. And how do we... Everything else, all the set dressing and the zombie stormtroopers and the space whales and everything else is great. We want that, but we want it all surrounding a very simple, like, is this person going to be with the person they love? Is this person going to make up with their sister? Is this person going to ever go see their dad so their dad can say, I love you and I'm proud of you? It's all, we love basic shit. We all love, like, at the end of the day, the stuff that makes us cry, the stuff that really makes us come out of that theater and go, holy shit, that really moved me. It's all pretty simple.
Yeah.
It's just, you gotta find it. And I think a lot of times you see them trying to get there and they don't get there.
Well, and to point this out, I don't know if you caught yourself this, other than Shang-Chi, the three characters you're pointing out are characters that were introduced in the first three phases, Loki, Scarlet Witch, and Peter Parker. So that's the thing that I think both of us are agreeing on, is that they're not doing the work with the new characters to get us to care about them, give us emotional stories to go on. Yes. And I get it. Kamala Khan's family and her family, of course, fantastic.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah, they're great. But like, there's a lot of these other characters that we're not getting those connections with. We're not investing in their relationships as strongly as we did with all the phase one, phase two, phase three characters that were all lined up and connected in their way. Even Guardians of the Galaxy, which had nothing to do originally with the overall MCU storyline, they eventually weave them in when we saw Infinity War and Endgame, and their relationships became important to the overall construct of the MCU and the relationships. We're not seeing that yet. So this is either a tough time of transition for Marvel, and we're going to look back on this and go like, wow, this was a tough situation, but they figured it out. Or this is the time here where they're clearly making a number of missteps and they're not figuring out how to course correct in a way to get people back invested in the levels that they were before.
Yeah.
Because if everything was quality, nobody would be complaining about superhero fatigue or that it's too much or you're making me watch too much. If people liked it, they'd be all about it and watching it all the time.
Yeah. And look, I'm sure that there's people listening to this right now that are like, well, these new characters haven't had a chance yet. Like, you know, you're talking about Wanda, but Wanda was in Ultron, and then it was her and Vision in Civil War. And then it was, so like, yes, you're right. Like, a lot of this stuff, like the Nebula, like, did we all really care a ton about Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy 1?
Right.
No, we didn't. No. She was like a cool looking, you're like, oh, okay. Like, it's, you know, it's Amy Pond from Doctor Who, but like, whatever. But by this point, we would have gotten a Guardians 2. By this point, and I think that's, we should have gotten a Shang-Chi 2.
Yeah.
We should have gotten, like, we should have gotten the next bit of information that makes us go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I think they just kind of bit off more than they could chew with the amount of characters between the streaming service and the features that they were trying to get out there. And so I think, you know, it's a lesson. Now, what James Gunn is doing, interestingly enough, is, look, we all know Superman Legacy is coming out swinging with, like, you know, 35 superheroes in it. So it's going to be a different strategy. He's, like, throwing us into the middle of a superhero universe where it could either be so crowded and we're going to be like, well, there's too many people, I don't care.
Right.
Or he could very quickly, we could watch Superman Legacy and go, oh, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
Guy Gardner's a good guy, but he's kind of a chauvinist asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Hawkgirl is very aggressive. Cool. Okay, Supergirl. Okay, this is what they're doing with, you know, like, if he can give us a, this is who these people are, if he can do kind of what he did with Nebula,
Yeah.
Where we might get just a little bit of Guy Gardner, but we'll get enough information that then when we get to the Green Lantern series on Max or whatever it is they end up doing, and Guy Gardner shows up, we're like, oh yeah, this asshole. Oh, right. He just had a non-asshole moment. Maybe right. He's not so bad. Oh, Guy Gardner sacrificed his life. Well, now I fucking love Guy Gardner. Like, that's what you do. And I think that that's what Marvel did so well that they're not. And honestly, that's what Dave Filoni did so well in Clone Wars and Rebels. That is, I think, maybe not quite happening as well as it was in Bad Batch and Ahsoka.
Yeah. The other part of this.
Certainly not in Boba Fett.
Yeah. The other element when it comes to Marvel, Michael, we should, I know we're getting to the 30-minute mark. We like to wrap up around this time, but the other element of this is that the Jonathan Majors, Kang, Coleman Domingo, Dr. Doom situation is up in the air. So it makes it even harder to create these connections and make these characters stand out and really live through their stuff that they're going through if we don't have the big overall baddie that we had from about the middle of phase one on. We knew that there was something bigger that was happening and they were coming together in some way after the first Avengers movie towards something. So there's not that thing. And so now having with the Jonathan Major stuff up in the air and Kang gone, where are they going to make this big baddie appear?
Well,
and it's got to be sooner rather than later.
So they did something different with Kang than with Thanos. And I think that we talk a lot about it, but I think to be fair to them, like let's put the Jonathan Majors,
sure,
Coleman to me. Let's assume Kang is staying. Forget the casting thing. Ultimately, if it all works and we think it's badass, we're going to forgive it and we're not going to care. Like, that's fine. So put that aside. But what they did with Thanos is we saw Thanos.
Yeah.
At the very end of Avengers,
yes,
which finished up phase one.
Right.
We saw Thanos a little bit more in Guardians of the Galaxy, but it was really Ronan's movie. Thanos was just there to be like, I want the Infinity Stones. Go get them for me. Here's my daughters.
Right.
That's really what he did there. It wasn't until Infinity War started and he steps out on Thor's ship.
Yeah.
And we really go, oh, this is who this guy is. Yeah. This is what he wants. He wants to balance the universe. He wants to like wipe out half of existence. That's not information we had until we got to
the
finale of the Infinity Saga.
Yeah.
They kind of kept Thanos in reserve, like that we knew he was coming, to your point. We all knew Thanos was the big bad, but they kept him really, really in reserve.
Yeah.
With Kang, the second he showed up in the finale of Loki season one, like we're like, okay, here he is. And then he kept show. Then he's in Quantumania, and then we get Victor Timely, and we get all this stuff. But Thanos, I think the universe is overcrowded, and my way of solving this problem is to wipe out half of existence for the good of everybody. That's my plan.
Right.
Kang, I want to rule.
Yeah.
I want to be the one Kang that survives this big multi. And like, it's not a, what does Kang really want? I get that there's a multiversal war and there's a thousand Kangs and there's the Council of Kangs and there's all these different Kangs and they're all fighting for what, but like, what are they fighting for?
It's much more nebulous. Right.
It's nebulous. Yeah. And when you roll him out so early, like, I think they're kind of following the Dave Filoni issue that I see sometimes, which is they might know, but they're okay. Well, when we get to the Kang dynasty, we're going to reveal that this was all really because of this.
Right.
Kang really wanted this, or he just wanted a hug from Ravonna. Like, whatever it is, like that, but without us knowing what it is, we're just sort of watching a bunch of stuff happen.
Yeah.
And we don't like watching stuff happen. We love stuff happening.
Right.
When we know what we're like, okay, I get it. We can watch all this stuff in the world because I gotta save this person who I love. Yeah. I gotta get to my dad. I gotta go find my best friend and be like, you were always my best friend. Like it's always really simple stuff. And in the absence of simple stuff, we start to get a little confused and then we start to get a little bored.
Yeah. 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 I think those standalone movies, I don't mean standalones and not connected, but I mean like Iron Man, Thor, Captain America. We need that, I believe, in this new phase so that people can connect to these characters and not streaming either. These have to be coming out theatrically. If you're trying to create Young Avengers, if you're just going to swing to Young Avengers and we're just going to essentially be Guardians of the Galaxy in a new format, okay, fine, but you're not going to have the same connection. That was the gift of the Iron Man series, the Captain America series, and Thor series, is we got to connect to these characters, and then we get to see people coming in who were going to be part of the overall story once the Avengers showed up, and then all of this that came afterwards. That's not happening here. So I wonder if maybe this is something they're looking at and realizing they've got to make these changes and got to go forward in some way that is evocative of the past, that what worked in the past, but in a new way that appeals to the audiences nowadays. Yeah. We will see.
Just to, one more thing real quick.
One more thing real quick
to end it. They hate it when I do it. They hate it. Shannon and Roga hate it. Let's do a short show. Okay. Real quick. it's just, this reminds me of I went up to Canada a few years ago and I ran like a 3-day workshop on putting together pitch Bibles and how to develop a show because, you know, as an executive, I got pitched all the time. Now as a writer and showrunner, I'm putting together pitches all the time. And as an executive, one of the things that I saw so much, and this is a very geek specific problem. So if you're out there right now and you want to be a writer and you want to do this, this is good advice, is that as geeks, we get excited about all the weird, multiversal, timey-wimey, epic, cool special effects stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to, when you start a story or when you're starting to tell your story, you pitch that. So I saw so many pitches that were like, the year is 3739. A post-apocalyptic war has wiped out humanity. A zombie virus was released, but the zombies mutated. And now they're alien tentacle monsters. And the alien tentacle monsters have wiped out everything. And a small band of humans have survived. And you'll spend 10 minutes telling me the history of this post-apocalyptic universe. Right. And 10 minutes into your pitch, you're going to be like, and this is the story of this girl. And by this point, I'm tuned out because all you've been talking about is fucking zombies and plant monsters and tentacles. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. If you just invert it.
Oh, yeah.
And you go, this is the story of a girl that reunited with her parents.
Right.
She grew up an orphan and all she ever wanted was to find her parents. By the way, she grew up an orphan in a zombie apocalypse. And then the zombie apocalypse mutated and it turned into plant monsters. And as she got older, she became adept at navigating this world. But all she ever cared about was finding her parents. Mm-hmm. And then all of this stuff happens and she gets pulled into this rebellion and she gets pulled into this world and she has to fight. But all she wants is to find her parents. And by the time I get to the end of the thing, I'm like, wow, that's cool. The zombies were cool and the tentacle monsters, but I really love that she wanted to find her parents.
Yeah.
Like, that's all that matters. So when you're pitching a show, start with character first. However, whoever the character is, tell me who they are, tell me what they want, and then add everything else in. And I think that Marvel phases 1, 2, and 3 did that.
Yeah.
I think Marvel's 4, 5, and 6 are pitching me all the cool shit without telling me what I should be caring about.
That's a great point, Mike, and I hope you all who are watching or listening take that advice. Start with the human story first, then get to all the other stuff. That's how you hook people, usually, when you're doing these pitches and usually when you're creating these universes and putting them out there for people to enjoy. Big thanks to these tweets here from Jonathan here at John_Yara, Francisco Lopez at FJLopez1505, and Puneet Jazzy at P_Jazzy. Who got us talking about all of this and what we would do and how we would change things and how we'd like to see the Marvel universe and other universes going forward handle things in the future here. So thank you all so much. And big, big thanks to Michael. Michael, what do we have to tell these people who are watching and listening to us?
Listen, if you'd like to follow us, you can do it at @geek_buddies or on Instagram at @the_geek_buddies. If you would like to follow Mr. Roka, you can do it at @TheRokaSays. If you would like to do me, you can DM me at MK2.
No, and no.
Woo! Okay. It's a rainy Tuesday.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And you can also hit the like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, leave your comments below. What did you think of this Geek Bite? What do you think of the state of geek culture and streaming services and everything else? Let us know below. If you're listening to us on a podcast, leave us some stars and comments so we go up in the rankings. Always, if you are doing anything else, the best thing you can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. We got there, for God's sake. And if you want to follow our third Geek Buddy, Shannon McClung, he is @Shannon_McClung on Twitter and @ShannonTheGeekBuddy on Instagram. Of course, we're sending well wishes as he's enjoying his honeymoon, and we'll hopefully be back on Friday for our main show. We will see if it's going
Hopefully
live.
Hopefully, he put on some goddamn sunscreen.
Yeah, that for sure as well. All right, y'all, take care of yourselves. Be well. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode here of Geek Bites, brought to you by the
Geek
Buddies.
Hey! Hey!
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.